I knew this process was going to happen. I think we all knew this process was going to happen. And to be fair, I tip my hat off to the fans that actually got in the stadium. And I know people are going to say, oh, you're condoning it. I am. Because the one thing I do regret about this is that the Glazers weren't actually there to witness it. Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Del, and I've got three co-hosts this evening. First of all, I'm going to bring in Mr. Steve Eyre. How you doing, Steve?
Evening, Stel. Are you okay?
All good, mate. All good. I've got over the Orthodox Easter, as it was at the weekend. So, yeah, the Orthodox Easter is always after the normal one, I'd say. Is it even a normal thing? I don't know. But ours is always later. So, yeah, we're good.
Okay.
There you go. Oh, there you go. No one really gives a shit too much about that, mate. Rod, you okay?
It's a pretty miserable day, isn't it? Well, it is there anyway. It's just rained all day, so not a good bank holiday Monday.
Yeah, come on, you have to take Caesar.
We have to take
Caesar for a walk, though, man. Come on, you can't not take the dog for a walk.
That's standard, that. It'd be driving mad otherwise.
Is he in there now?
No, he's downstairs.
I saw you on Phil's podcast the other week, Beyond the Pitch, and he was bossing the show, mate. You got more attention than you.
Yeah, he's been doing skills. Want to get him on Britain's Got Talent. Is that still going, that?
Yeah, I think it is. Britain's Got Talent, yeah. David Walliams and all that.
He's got a few tricks, obviously.
There you go. Yeah, wonderful. All right, well, we've got a guest on our podcast. It's Davidson. She is an FPL connoisseur, I guess. Amy, is that right?
I think that's generous. I'm average.
How's your season going so far?
I think I started strong, progressively getting worse.
I think that's the case for most of us, to be honest. We start off and then we kind of forget to change our team, and the next minute, you know, you're on like 5 points.
Yeah, no points this week, really, to speak of, but that's not what they're doing with me.
I hope they blimey. All right, well, let's talk about the Premier League action this weekend. Quite a few games to mention, Steve, City 2-0 victory at Crystal Palace. I don't think it would be fair to say it was a second string City team, because any of those City players could get into most Premier League teams, to be fair, but it was a dominant display. All right, people could argue that Palace got the deck chairs out, although I think about 15 of their players are out of contract in the summer, so you're kind of thinking, where's the fight? But City were in control from the off, weren't they, mate?
Yeah, they were in control. There wasn't much penetration until the hour mark, and we were waiting and hoping that Sergio Aguero would get a moment. He had a couple of half chances in the first half that just didn't fall right for him, and they did look in second gear, really. But I think probably a reset at half-time, and obviously I think it was two goals in 84 seconds or something, just changed the whole afternoon and the complex, and City could have obviously gone on and scored more. And you're right when you say it's not exactly a second string, but it's not a team that plays together often. It's world-class players still, but they're thrown together. I can't imagine they've trained too much in terms of shapes and patterns on the training ground to prepare for it. They're getting back from all over the Europe, all over the country to play. And these lads are just getting on with it. And they know what good looks like and feels like, and they know how to win. And that's what they did.
And tell me about Sergio Aguero's goal, mate, because when you see it, you're thinking, he makes it look easy, doesn't he? That's a difficult technique to bring the ball down like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Noticeably, he wasn't in and around the back post, darting in for a one-touch tap-in. He was very much holding out. So it was like I'm not sure if it was a square pass or slightly pulled back, but it's not a position that he would have taken in his prime, because he'd have been darting right towards the goalkeeper for a sliding. But nevertheless, in that moment, instinct, practice, talent all came together at once, and his touch was sublime. It just sat up nicely still. Probably could have settled the ball down, but him, better than anybody else possibly in the world, he took it first time on the flush, on the laces, on the half volley. And to be honest with you, it was in at the near post, roof of the net, in a blink of an eye. And Rodri played the game as a forward. I actually don't think there'd be many strikers in the game would have actually scored that, other than Aguero. It was that special spell.
Right foot control, left foot, back of the net. It's that simple for him. That simple.
It was brilliant, yeah.
Rod, can you talk to me about Raheem Sterling? Because I stupidly went on social media after the game and saw so many people talking about his form. And then I was listening to Radio 5 Live and people were calling up talking about Raheem Sterling not having a good season. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, this kid, right? Because to me, he's a kid. I'm about 15 years older than him, I think. He's been absolutely sensational since joining City for a massive fee from Liverpool. He's carried them a lot of the time. So is he not entitled to have a few bad games in a season?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you set a standard like Raheem Sterling, you need to be going that way and not, you know, that way. And he seems to have stagnated a bit. And yes, the team have carried him a bit this season and he's not really played a lot, to be honest. There's not as much as Raheem Sterling you'd expect him to play. So, you know, it's a tough skill these days, you know, especially social media and all this crap. And you know, imagine if he weren't winning the league, what stick he'd be getting. So, you know, you've got to give him a little bit of a leeway because, you know, they've still won the league and they've won it at Canter, really. So, and they're in the Champions League final, probably, you know, bearing a bad performance or a bad game against PSG, you'd expect them to go forward with a 2-1 advantage. So, yeah, no, it's just a bit harsh. But like I say, you know, you set a standard that you'd expect him to be getting progressing, not going the other way. So, but, you know, see how he goes next year.
Did anyone see that clip after the final against Spurs? With the physio went to grab his hand and he kind of slapped it away, like, no, don't touch me. My missus is watching.
Still, no, as he did it, he's like looking at the big screen. Like, get off.
Steve, you're saying?
I think I've got two huge points that in support of him that nobody's mentioned, not one pundit, not one critique. Nobody's mentioned it, so you can have this as an exclusive. That I honestly think there's two strong points, which are, well, three probably, that I've seen him a supposed slight dip in form. So do you want them all?
Go ahead.
Well, one's obviously the emergence of Phil Foden and Riyad Mahrez in terms of form and consistency, which means that the place isn't guaranteed. So that's the obvious one. That has actually been mentioned. But who in the last 10 years has been the best left midfield player in the Premier League, possibly in Europe? Left midfield.
Ten years. That's a lot.
There's only one. It's David Silva. He's been the best player in the Premier League at left midfield.
But the thing is, Steve, you're going to get people saying, well, what about Sadio Mane? Because he plays on the left-hand side.
Yeah, he plays on that last line where Sterling plays, though. But in terms of like what I would call in the middle, on the second line in midfield, basically, Raheem Sterling for 7 years has been playing 5 yards away from David Silva, one of the best midfielders that the Premier League has ever seen. And they would 1-2 the way all the way down the left wing. And at the last moment, David Silva would play the perfect pass at the perfect time into the penalty area for Raheem Sterling to run onto. But the bigger point is, when they got crowded out over that side, the ball would get switched very, very quickly to Kevin De Bruyne, who was playing right midfield for most of these seasons. And he would put that ball in behind defences that would reach the back post for Sterling to get a tap in or a walk in. I'm sure he would say the chances are harder. But that ball would come in 5 or 6 times a game. Now, all of a sudden now, Silva's not there. He's gone back to Spain. Kevin De Bruyne is not playing right midfield anymore. Mostly Mahrez picks up them positions. When it goes out to Mahrez, you don't get it back because he's that good. He touches it and he shifts it and he shoots. And Kevin De Bruyne is in more of a central position now. So if you think about the two best things for Raheem Sterling, whilst Manchester City have improved, evolved, and the whole squad and manager have moved forward tenfold, the sufferer is Raheem Sterling because he's not got David Silva 5 yards inside and he's not got Kevin De Bruyne often in right midfield crossing that ball to the back post because it's a different player in a different position now. So there's two big things that help Sterling's game are no longer in Manchester City's team. And that's another thing that I don't think has been mentioned.
Thank you very much. Excellent. Absolutely love it.
As a world-class, a potential world-class player, have you not got to adapt and...
Yeah, Rod, that's what he's struggling with, though, isn't he? You know, he's now trying too hard. He's now trying to beat people 1v1. He's got the pace, but he's not necessarily got the skill or the technique. And he looks like he's in a cul-de-sac, in all fairness. So, yeah, everything you say there is spot on. He now needs to, if he wants to stay with this team, stay with this manager and stay with success, he needs to evolve and add things to his game. And it just looks like he's trying that and trying too hard at the moment to me. But the two main unbelievable best players in City's midfield, one's playing a different game and one's no longer at the club, and it's not helping him.
Mm. But the thing is, Steve, when you talk about players evolving, we've seen numerous players in the past, be it attack-minded players, like, okay, for example, Ruud Gullit. That's the best example I can give right now, because I remember he was at Milan, he was more like a forward, and then he dropped into central midfield, then he went to Sampdoria, he was like a defensive midfielder, came to Chelsea, he was a sweeper. Mm. Does Raheem Sterling have the components or the ability to become a right back or a holding midfielder? I don't see that. I know it's too early to say because he's not even 30 yet, is he? So
No. There was people like Antonio Valencia who went from a midfielder to a right back to extend his career and get more success from it. But no, Raheem Sterling is right across the front line. But all of a sudden now, City's best player and an England certain starter, he's probably neither at the moment now. And I think Rodri just was alluding to it. He's got to try and work it out with the help of his teammates and his manager. But he now needs to add more to the game. If he does, he'll be a hell of a player.
Absolutely. Amy, talk to us about City. I think they're going to go on to win the Champions League. It pains me to say it, being a United fan. But what do you make of them this season especially?
Yeah, I think we've had a bit of a weird year. And just kind of touching back on Sterling, I think he is the kind of classic, really selfish player, and I think that's probably what he's struggling with. And I don't necessarily, it sounds more negative than it means to, but I think, you mentioned David Silva, he was like the classic, not selfish player. But like you said, he'll put the ball in front of him, he'll just finish it off. Whereas Sterling, I think, misses out on a lot of opportunities for assists because he won't give that ball up. He'll take the shot, he'll miss. And I think at the minute, City as a whole have quite a lot of players like that, and I just don't think they're gelling the way they had done 3 years ago, even 2 or 3 years ago. Having said that, in international competitions, you can't argue that City don't have a full squad where they can play two completely separate teams and they can do the job. I've got no doubt in them in that sense. You know, who knows on the Pep roulette who's going to start? Some combos were better than others, but the Mali always do well. And I think I think they probably will. They will win, sorry. I mentioned I should kind of hone in on Phil Foden because, my goodness, what a player he is. And he's so young and it's so depressing how young he is. But, I think either Sterling adapts or he already is going to be pushed out of the way. Great player, but too selfish.
Wow. There you go. See, shots being fired already. Love it. Straight away. All right. Okay, let's move on to Brighton and Leeds United. Wow. 2-0 to Brighton. It's almost as if Graham Potter's got Bielsa's number, Steve, innit? And Danny Welbeck, what a finish. What an absolute finish. Mate, Brighton were all over them. This is a Leeds United team that their fans are saying, oh, well, we beat City with 10 men. Well, you went to the Amex and got absolutely dealt with, mate.
Yeah, well, it's the unpredictability of Leeds that have made them fascinating this year. We've described them on your podcast as hit, miss or maybe, and that's what they're proving to be. That type of person or that type of outfit normally end up in a middle order somewhere, which is also what we expect. Bamford, it appears if he doesn't score and give his team the lead, he's likely to not play 90 minutes, so his tally's come down. And I always think Danny Welbeck's brilliant. He's one Manchester United player as a Manchester City supporter, probably because he's from Manchester. I'm biased, but he scored some really important goals for Manchester United in England, and we know where he was at with his injuries. And you know, when you think that Manchester United, well, I've seen it as a business thing, but you know, they've got Ighalo and they've had Ighalo and others who you know not filled the role anywhere near as good as Danny Welbeck. And I think he appears to be a really, really good lad. And when he's fit, he's as good as anybody in that middle area of the Premier League, I believe. So delighted to see him score a goal. Type of thing you practice in the gym when you're a kid, up against the wall, and then it's all right. You know, you can do 100 Cruyff turns, but eventually you throw it up in the air and do it. But to do it in a game and fool and fox two defenders and then shoot with your weaker foot across the keeper to score, absolutely brilliant goal.
Rod, Brighton are now on 37 points, which if I look at the table right now, they're 10 points clear of Fulham. I think they're safe, aren't they? They're not going to go down. I can't see that happening anyway.
No, I think even Newcastle and Burnley, even Burnley are struggling tonight. They're getting beat of West Ham at home, but still a long way to go. But yeah, it's a great result for them, 2-0. It's a good win. You know, like you say, it was well convincing that they actually battered them. So, no, they're safe. And I think 9 points is a big ask, but there's 4 games left. We've got to win all 4 games. That's not going to happen. So Newcastle and Burnley and Brighton are all probably safe now.
There we go. And speaking of Newcastle, Amy, 2-0 loss against Arsenal. Steve Bruce was quick to congratulate Arsenal and praise them for their performance. I know a lot of Newcastle fans are highly critical of Steve Bruce and the guy upstairs, but we're not going to mention him just yet. I don't think it was a great performance. I think Arsenal got lucky with the first goal, though, in all fairness, because had Aubameyang not completely hit an air shot, it wouldn't cannoned off his foot and go straight to Elneny. But all in all, I don't think you're pleased with the performance. I don't think you're pleased with the result. But given that Fulham lost, how many points is it now? 9? Is it 9?
Yeah, 9 clear. Really bad performance. And you say that, you know, Steve Bruce, I think he mentions it in every single interview I've ever seen of him this year. He always talks about our big players. You can't win games if you're missing your 2 or 3 big players. I don't know what that's doing for the mentality of the others, but it didn't work because we had ASM start, we had Wilson start. It just didn't work. Obviously, Willock's been great for us this year, couldn't play. But that aside, there's just no excuse, really. Because Aubameyang, the second goal and everything, great. But he's only just come back from being really quite poorly. I don't know. I felt like the game was set up where that was Newcastle's to win. And I don't know whether it was a bit of complacency or what was going on. But Arsenal should have had the mentality issues and we shouldn't have, really, with the team that we started with. Just awful performance, and there's not really an explanation for it. I can't work out why it happened. Not to take away any credit from Arsenal, because they played well, the goals were good, but it just felt a little bit like Newcastle sat back and let it happen.
The thing is, you played so much better at Anfield. I know Liverpool's game is much more different to Arsenal's. They play higher up the field. They got mistakes in them defensively. I'm not saying Arsenal don't, but given Liverpool's history this season, Anfield isn't a great place for them to be at this moment in time. So why do you think there was such a massive difference between the performance at Anfield than the performance at St. James's Park against Arsenal?
They always do it the hard way. It's like the big games just seem to come away and get a point, even win sometimes, and it's the easier ones and seem to really fumble on, and I just don't know why. There isn't really any excuse for it, because maybe it was because Anfield were really, really needed to get something out of that game, and now it's like it would be nice, but probably not as essential. But that's the only thing. There's no excuse for it unless you're really coming down to, like, individual players, super subs, will it be in one of them, but that should be minor. That shouldn't have affected a 90-minute game. So, I don't know. We need to do something, because we can't kind of sort of sit back now. We're not, I think we're safe. I think the bottom three sorted, but it's just not nice to have to watch other teams' results come in, mark your position in the league.
Do you know, we had Eric Neal on beginning of the season from the Two Rash Challenges podcast, and he's a Newcastle fan from the United States. And we're asking him, what do you expect from this Newcastle squad and from this manager? Because at that moment in time, I think Newcastle were, 11th, 12th in the table. And you're thinking, well, that's probably the best that they can be given the current circumstances. So I'll ask the same question to you. Like, when you look at the players, okay, you've got Dubravko as a fantastic goalkeeper. Almiron is okay. I wouldn't say he's a world beater, though. Sam Maximan is clearly your best player. And then you've got Callum Wilson. Jonjo Shelvey, yeah, you could say he's a decent player. But then when you look at the rest of the squad, where do you expect to be?
I mean, people have this like weird impression of Newcastle fans, and we always get called delusional. We always think we assume we're going to be top four, whatever. We don't. We just don't want to be in a relegation battle every year, which is what we ended up being doing for years. It'd just be nice to play with a bit of aspiration and to maximise with what we've got rather than the way we currently play. Some of the games this year in particular have been absolutely appalling. I mean, we lost, was it 3-0 to Brighton, maybe 6-8 weeks ago? That was the worst in my living memory I've ever seen a Newcastle squad play, ever. It was that bad. So I think, yeah, I think most Newcastle fans will probably agree. We're not that delusional to think we need to be playing internationally. We just don't want to be scrapping around the bottom, either in the relegation zone or teetering around it, having to wait for the results to come in to see where we're going to end up. It would just be nice. Yeah, mid-table, fine. We'll probably take that right now. Definitely with the squad we've got and the way that we've been spending money. Wellington in particular springs to mind and kind of missed opportunities of buying for that kind of money. It's probably the best we can hope for, and sort of take it from them. I'm not going to mention the man at the top just yet, but I think that is the realistic expectation of most Newcastle fans with where we're in this situation we are.
That's a fair point. And, you know, Rod, we've spoken on numerous occasions about Mike Ashley and how he manages the club. I was listening to a podcast a few weeks ago. I think it was it called? I forget what it's called. Under the Kosh. And they had Andy Woodman on. He used to play for Crystal Palace and Exeter. And he was at Newcastle with Alan Pardew, but it was the goalkeeping coach. And he was saying that they offered him the 6-year contract before they offered it to Alan Pardew, because he was just such a nice guy and got on with everyone at the club. Now, if you've got someone running the club like Mike Ashley and giving contracts to goalkeeping coaches before the head coach, bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I actually seen that. I actually watched it. He was like worried to tell him because he didn't know how the manager would take it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's been off for 6 years.
Why'd you said to him, wait until they offer it to me or something like that, wasn't it?
Stel, was it the fact that Andy Woodman's son was the best 16-year-old goalkeeper in the country? Were they not trying to get the family on side?
I don't know. But he did say that his son wasn't at Newcastle and they kept it quiet.
Well, he's not. He was one of the best. He was one of the best schoolboy and youth goalkeepers in the country that was coveted by every single top club. And the certain ways of looking after families to make sure your son ties down at that club, and can't rule out that didn't have a part to play in it.
Well, I don't think that happens at big clubs, does it? Do shenanigans like that happen? No. No, I refuse to believe it.
Well, look after the parents. You've got a chance of being looked after at the bar with the boy.
Very true. Very true. So, Rod, I'm going to retract my question.
Hey, that's not a fact. That's not mine. Was opinion fact.
Fair enough. Well, look. Okay, fair enough then. So, Rod, again with Newcastle United, again bad result at the weekend. They're safe. I wouldn't say, okay, it's not guaranteed that they're safe, but you can pretty much say that they're safe. So what happens next season then? Does Steve Bruce stay in the job? Do they spend money? Does Mike Ashley turn around and say, oh, well, you know what? There are six teams that want to break away from the Premier League. There might be a chance for us to actually do something, but wait, it's not going to happen now.
Yeah, with this pandemic going on and probably knowing Mike Ashley, well, not knowing Percy, but kind of knowing it, the way he operates, you know, he's got thick skin, this guy. So he's going to probably stick with Steve Bruce. You know, he's not a fan's favourite, but he's probably, Mike Ashley wants him to keep him up, and he's done that. So, yeah, he's probably will keep Steve Bruce, and then see how it goes next year with the fans in, you know, and if it has a bad start, and they're probably the right to be on the wall, but, you know, he'll probably keep him for the start of the season and then see how it goes from there.
Steve, I've got a friend who claims he did security at Mike Ashley's house many years ago, and Mike Ashley built a downstairs, a basement nightclub for his son. And what kind of music do you think they played there?
Oh,
no Rick Astley, no? Bit stereotypical there, eh, Steve?
Sorry, Amy.
Step inside, it's not the first time I've heard those jokes.
maybe a bit of PJ and Duncan or something. I don't know, Stel.
Ooh, now that's below the belt. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Right, let's move on then. What other game shall we talk about? Well, there was supposed to be a game at Old Trafford that we're going to discuss later, which obviously didn't occur, but Spurs absolutely battered Sheffield United, Amy. Another club with managerial issues per se. Good victory, great hat-trick for Gareth Bale, but can you see him being at Spurs next season? I know he's only there on loan.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Such a good game to watch, unless you're a Sheffield fan, obviously. But, fantastic, all of the goals, though, to be fair. And even the, I think it was Sonso that was offside, you know, VAR Duff, that was another wondrous goal. So, you know, really good Spurs performance. I mean, obviously a bit quiet for Harry. Bit of a weird one from him. I was a bit confused about the Bale situation. He wasn't really getting any minutes, and then I was like, well, what was the whole point? Was it just, you know, a historic thing? Was it just, you know, for the fans? What was the point? From an FBL side, you know, he's in a lot of teams. A lot of people really rate him, with Spurs. He's doing great, and I'd like to see him next year, so maybe it's a bit of my bias coming into it. But yeah, I'd like to think he will stick around.
Excellent. And Rod, Dele Alli finally got a kick, didn't he? He was all right. Do you think he's got a future at Spurs?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a fresh slate now. Jose's gone. You know, if you listen to Ryan Mason, he's obviously had a good week in training and he stuck him in. So he wasn't going to get that with Jose if he had a good training session or not, by the sounds of it. So, Daniel Levy's a businessman. We're just going to give him away. He's going to try and get him back to his best so he can get the best money possible for him. So, you know, I don't see him going anywhere. I just see him staying at Spurs and see who they bring in. You know, someone will bring in might not fancy him either, but I'm pretty sure, you know, 2-3 years ago, Dele Alli was getting talks of Real Madrid and stuff. So it was a bit over the top then, you know, because he's still got a long way to go, but you know, he can still get back for that and playing well for England as well. So I think it might be a bit too late for the Euros for him, but no, he's a good player. And obviously, if you give him games, you can't expect too much from him from coming in and not playing for so long. Last time he scored was March in 2020. So you can't expect too much from him in these games. And, you know, Ryan Mason obviously fans him and likes him. He wouldn't play him.
Yeah, true. Well, Steve, I need to bring up two players because this hit me this morning. Eric Dier, who we've spoken about at great length in the past, and then Ndombele, another player who we've spoken about at great length. Now, you've got Eric Dier, who Pochettino played regularly, Mourinho played regularly, now Ryan Mason is playing him quite regularly. Then you've got Ndombele, who Pochettino signed for 50-odd million quid, hardly played him, Mourinho hardly played him, couldn't get a tune out of him, and now the same for Ryan Mason. So you've got Spurs fans on the one hand saying, well, why is Eric Dier still playing? And then you've got Spurs on the other hand saying, well, why isn't Ndombele playing? So three managers see similar things about the two players. Am I wrong here for assuming that?
No, and I think you can throw Gareth Southgate in for Eric Dier as well.
Very good.
You know, at the last tournament, he was, taking penalties and playing games and body on the line stuff. So, you know, there are those certain players. Jordan Henderson was another that was split opinion, but, you know, managers and coaches always seem to pick him. I think you've got to put your trust into these guys that have played the game, gone and done the coaching qualifications, have a good idea, you know, what a good player is. And they don't always get it right, but I think mostly they do. And obviously you need a team that you can't have everybody being the same type of player. And I think supporters still like to be thrilled. I think they like to think that they're getting value for what the club paid for them and what they pay to watch them play. But that's not always the case. But in terms of like a job fit for a manager, you know, there are just certain players that go into teams. I mean, who could ever imagine that Phil Jones would survive 14 transfer windows? Who would ever believe that to be the case? Who decided that he was to get a new contract and to not play within the last 12 months? But, you know, what goes on in a football club, I think largely you've got to trust. And, you know, fans possibly think, you know, they know better. But I think they just want the juices flowing by these types of characters. But you can't have 11 like that in your team. And reliability is a key thing for a coach, and certainly a young coach at the moment. And he's a solid stock, Eric Dyer. And I don't really see much in Nombele. You know, I don't see it. But what do you want when you've got Harry Kane, Son, Gareth Bale and Dele Alli in front of you? You don't want anybody, you know, flash. You don't want anybody, you know, you've got them at the top end of the pitch who are going to win the game for you. And obviously last night they did quite comfortably. So what are they expecting from these players?
Sorry to cut in there, Steve, but the thing is, what you're going to get is Spurs fans saying, well, Ndombele isn't that attacking midfielder. He's like the number eight where he'll sit in the middle of the park. So you've got Højbjerg doing the dirty work, and then you've got Ndombele, then maybe someone like Dele Alli sitting in front of him. But then they'll say, well, Harry Winks is playing in front of him. Well, there's got to be a reason why...
Who's saying this, though? Is it Terry from the Builders Site who's got a touch like Harold Shipman? Where's the credentials for these people? These just fans, what do they know? These people are professional footballers. Like,
hey, listen, they're just
played the game and who have obviously seen what he does in training day in, day out, and then you've got old Terry saying, oh, he's crap, he can't do this. What does he know?
Yeah, but Terry from the Building Site has studied hours of YouTube clips of Ndombele nutmegging players in second division French teams.
Yeah, but Ndombele has been there for how long? He still can't last 90 minutes.
Well, this is it. I'm just a professional footballer.
And he sees every time, 60 minutes, 70 minutes, off he comes. No, what's that about? And he's cost how much?
55 million, 60-hour push.
Well, there's your problem right there. Why is he not playing 90 minutes? You looked up for how many times he's played 90 minutes, I suspect you could count on one hand. And he's been there how long? 2 years?
About that.
Yeah. So, okay.
All right. Fair enough.
Central midfielder. That you've got to run about for a long time.
Right, wonderful. Job. All right, let's move on very quickly. Amy, not the best game here. Southampton won, Leicester City won. But this is quite interesting because when Leicester played Southampton last time at St. Mary's, in the first 10 minutes, Leicester were goal up. Well, on Friday, Southampton were a man down, but it's still 0-0. But there you go. James Ward-Prowse scored a penalty. And then Johnny Evans equalised for Leicester City. But Vestergaard's challenge on Jamie Vardy, did you happen to see that?
Yes, I did.
Bit naughty that, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was just generally a bit of a strange weekend, I think, for some challenges and some decisions made. But yeah, I mean, the actual game on Friday night, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the curse of Friday night. Teams just don't seem to show up on what's called the early fixture when results don't come out the way you think they're going to. But yeah, bad challenge, probably one decision.
Rod, we've seen that kind of challenge thousands of times, but obviously without VAR, the players have got away with it. But that was a dangerous one, wasn't it? I know Vestergaard probably took his eye off the ball, probably didn't anticipate Jamie Vardy, but that was a terrible, terrible one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a dangerous one, you know, it's the pace that Vardy's got. And yeah, this is why VAR's been brought in, for stuff like this, you know, not for the crap that we've been seeing, for the stuff like this that potentially can put someone out of of doing work for a long time. So yeah, this is why it's cut out. It's, you know, he's obviously not meant it, but you know, it's clumsy. You need to eradicate it from the game, and that's why VAR's there. So.
And Steve, is history about to repeat itself for Leicester City? It looks like it's that time of the season again where the downward slope or the downward spiral is beginning. A draw, they're 2 points ahead of Chelsea in fourth place. West Ham, who I think are winning at the moment, are five behind them. Five behind them. So, yeah, four games to go.
Yeah, I think they've got a double game week. I think the next 7 days, next time we speak, Stel, I think it'll be a hell of a lot clearer. I'm not expecting Jamie Vardy to go to the end of the season on a drought. I'm expecting him to kick back in. We've discussed before, he seems to be getting further wider away from goal, which has helped Iheanacho because he's getting the chances. But obviously, Vardy likes that pace in the channel. I don't know whether he's lost a yard with that recent injury. Even if he has lost a yard, he'll still be rapid, but possibly not what he was. I think Leicester City, especially with the Europe campaign they've had this year, they're bound to be tiring. They've not really gone course and distance, nearly did it last year. And I'm expecting them, as I did do 6 weeks ago, I said it then and I'm going to say it now, I'm expecting them to be a win-lose-draw team till the end of the season and find themselves out of the top four still.
I agree with you, mate. I agree. Okay, well, look, let's finish it with something that has been dominating world football news for days. Well, it's been a couple of days, really, but by the time this goes out, people will probably still be talking about it. They're not talking about Inter Milan winning their 19th Scudetto, no. It's about Man United-Liverpool. That didn't happen because Manchester United fans grew a pair for the first time since 2010. For the first time, well, I'd say even before 2005, really. And they did something about it. Rod, I knew this process was going to happen. I think we all knew this process was going to happen. And to be fair, I tip my hat off to the fans that actually got in the stadium. And I know people are going to say, oh, you're condoning it. I am. Because the one thing I do regret about this is that the Glazers weren't actually there to witness it or to feel what was meant to happen. Because you know me, Rod, coming from a Cypriot background, you know, we've seen in the Cypriot League, as I told you in the past, when there have been bent referees, they put bombs in their cars, right? Mm. They've done it in Cyprus. Out here, okay, the mentality is much different. It's far less barbaric. But I think enough's enough for this club. Talk to me. What's going on?
No, yeah, you're right. It's, you know, over the years...
Are you eating Nutella?
No. Over the years, they've, like you say, with like Ced's touched on there, the letting people, bringing people in and then letting people like Welbeck go, even Darren Fletcher, you know, players that come through the system and were better players than what we had at the club or what you're bringing in or what you're getting rid of. So, yeah, it's just, and the Super League's obviously just tipping edge. I totally agree with you. You know, people were going to get in no matter what. You know, for Stewart, Sakura, there are people that are fans as well who would have communicated with someone outside the ground and they would have got in no matter what anyway. You see stores getting kicked in, but it doesn't really matter. They got in other ways as well. You've seen that you haven't been seen on the media, not security letting them in, people letting them in, we've seen it. So yeah, it was rightly so, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop till they're gone. You know, they took a debt of 500 million. They've raped over £1 billion, and the debt is more than what it was when they took over. So yeah, it's time for them to go. If you look at them, they look like a lot of hillbillies, but they shouldn't even be in our country anyway. It's just a joke. They don't give a shit about the club. They don't one bit. So, like I say, they've raked up probably a billion and a half. And
Same two billion, aren't they?
Close to.
Or even two billion and it's half a million. When they started in 2005, this is why we've probably gone over the top more than Chelsea, Liverpool, you know, Arsenal, to a certain extent, Tottenham, because we've been through this before and we just had enough. And yeah, it's not going to stop. And it's just going to carry on until we sell the club. And, you know, I just hope it doesn't affect Ollie and the team, which is going to be difficult, but because it's not going to stop. It's going to happen at every home game. You know, you're going to get a couple of idiots, like you're going to get a couple of snide police officers giving digs out. So you're going to get that, unfortunately. But, you know, the message was clearly sent, and it's not going to go away.
Steve, I've heard many people say, well, the fans are only behaving like this because they're not winning trophies. But, you know, 2005, I was there with the Glazer protest when they got chased out of Old Trafford, thrown in the back of a police car and driven away, when the mega store was trashed, when all these other things were occurring. United was successful then. In 2010, when the Green and Gold campaign started, United had just been in two Champions League finals, hardly a team that was in a downward spiral. And obviously now, as Rod said, the tipping point being the Super League, being all these dividends being paid out, all these snidey little things that the Glazers are doing, you know, selling shares that are non-votable shares, that don't have any rights to make money off the club. Enough's enough, man. Now, you're a City fan. Obviously, you might have different views. You might not sympathise with United. But I think as a Mancunian, seeing that the way the club is run and seeing that the way that supporters feel at the moment, since they felt since 2005, I think you might sympathise a little bit. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. I do. But I mean, obviously, and going another thing mentioned, you know, there were people disgruntled and they sorted out their own breakaway football club in FC United, who Rodri played for with distinction. You know, so he's felt the movement. You know, and people have mobilised to get their point across. I worry that, you know, if this is the way forward, though, we're going to be in for some years and years of people, when it doesn't go right for them, let's have a riot. You know, this is going to take some policing now, not just from the police, you know, from ourselves, really, from the human race, because if people see this as noisy, gets yourself noticed, gets your point across and actually wins, then people will be writing about everything. So that's a worry. But from a footballing point of view, again, you follow football all over the world, less so myself. Yeah, there's an integrity here. I was interested with what Alan Shearer said last night, that Manchester United have actually still spent more than anybody else in world football other than Manchester City on investment in the team, and like multi-million pounds ahead of like Barcelona and Real Madrid. That was picked up on Match of the Day last night, but not as much as City.
What City have done with the surrounding stadium and everything, the training ground, United should have done that with most of the money that they have instead. That's what they should have created instead. What they've done, they've turned to... Sorry, go on.
Has there ever been a leak in the Etihad roof?
I'm hearing United fans telling me, you know, saying to me today that, you know, the stadium's not had a lick of paint for 15 years and things like that, which I can't believe. But, you know, they've got a club legend in charge. He's been backed. They've overpaid for a hell of a lot of players in the squad. But, you know, politically, still, I don't feel the passion that you Reds feel. Because I've obviously got my hands full being a City supporter for the first 40 years of my life without success, and the last 10 years of it being excellent or close to being. So, you know, the rivalry will always be there. You know, interesting, Gary Neville's got a lot to say on it, you know, obviously, and I think a lot of the things he says are true and correct. But this is someone that took wages off these guys, you know, for 7 years. He wasn't complaining about them then. So I find that a little bit disingenuous. But there's enough better people in football, you know, and better people generally that I've got a stronger opinion about it than me. But I just hope that the movement and the mobilisation doesn't become a cult and everybody says, well, let's just have a riot. Because I can see that coming, especially when it gets encouraged, though.
The thing is, Steve...
When in 2005, when FC United started, I remember it. They asking me to play for him, and I was hesitant. I was thinking, well, I don't know if this is going to last or not. And I was with a good football team at the time, and we were doing well. So I thought I'd give it a year and see how they went on. Anyway, it went on a year. I won the league with the team I was with, which is probably a good thing I stayed. And then I joined him, and it was just unbelievable. And then obviously leaving and coming back, and then when I'm coming back, I was coaching the academy of the first time of the ground being built and that being opening. So it's been a massive thing for FC United and a brilliant thing for the fans. But, you know, it's enough is enough now. And yes, I agree with Steve, you know, you can't keep throwing your toys out the pram, but, you know, something needs to be done. And what do we do? Just ignore it and just keep letting these people just walk all over us. It, you know, it's just enough is enough.
Roger, do you not think these will be the type of characters, though, that will cut their own nose off to spite the face and everything they've lost on that game being cancelled and people abusing them and rioting against them and that? They possibly, Manchester United could suffer because they'll dig their heels in, not sell. You know, they're involved in other sports as well, aren't they? You know better than me again. And they'll just get the money back that they've lost by not giving it the manager and the team and not investing as they should. And, as businessmen, what they've lost yesterday and more, they'll not give it anywhere else. And I don't see them budging. I don't see it. But this is
the worry when you've got billionaires in the Ivory Towers and you can't really get to touch them. So, yeah, it's difficult. And like I said before, I hope it doesn't affect the team, but it's going to be difficult for Ollie and the team if this just continuous drama and going on every week. So I don't see, I don't see him selling straight away. I don't see him selling at all, but it's going to be difficult. I just don't know the answer, but you've got to do something.
The thing is, they will only sell when it starts hitting them in the pocket.
Yeah.
Right. That's the only way they will sell. Okay. And I said this years ago that fans should stop going to games. And let's just say people decided to stop going to Man United games. That'll hurt them. Mm. But long term, it really won't. Because as we've seen now, the past couple of years, or so I said since last year, since the pandemic, clubs are still surviving in the top league because there's the TV money. And then that's one of the reasons why they started talking about the Super League, because they could monetize it by, or should I say, bringing in more revenue with pay-per-view. They can stream matches on their own channels. They won't have a Sky Sports or a DAZN Sports or an ESPN broadcasting. They can say, right, we don't need these guys. We can have our own camera setups. We can have our own TV channel or website or something on YouTube and start charging people. And they can make their money that way. So people coming in and out of the turnstiles ain't really that much of a difference of what they can make from a broadcasting perspective. But it's about the sponsors. You know, you target the sponsors, the executives on the sponsors. You target, just little things here and there where the money comes in. You target them first, you know? And then when the owners are at the ground, when they eventually turn up, that's when you target them. You know, this thing about Ed Woodward's house, right? That was Neil Ashton. That had Neil Ashton's fingerprints all over it to get the sympathy. But it had nothing to do with United fans, I don't think, anyway. That's my opinion. You know, that whole thing was staged from what I believe, anyway. This isn't, that's conjecture, I'll just put it that way. But Amy, listen, you're probably sitting there thinking, Jesus Christ, these Man United fans are complaining about, a billion and a half being taken out of the club and they're not spending any money on, doing up the stadium or the infrastructure. But here you've got Newcastle United. And I remember many years ago, Steve Rafe doing a mock funeral, the death of Newcastle United because of Ashley and Lambias. And your situation isn't as bad as United financially. But you guys don't like your owners either.
And I've really sat on the fence a bit the last couple of days with what those fans have done, whether I agree with it or not, because they've got my sympathy, they've got my empathy, I know what it feels like to want you're going about. And we've tried various things over the years, like we've not gone to games, we've boycotted games. We've took flags in, we've took flags out, we've stopped using the shop, whatever. And nothing's ever worked because, as we've kind of touched on, these are kind of minimal hits to the owner financially. And at the end of the day, what just happened was our team had half a stadium in. Because that's the other thing, you're always going to get two schools of thought with this. No matter what you do, there's going to be the half that still go out of loyalty to the club, and there's going to be the other half that boycott. One thing we've never done, as far as I know or can remember, is that we've never kind of done this whole storming the stage and going on the pitch thing. We've never took it to that level. Whether that's something that we need to do, but I just don't think the owners would listen. I don't think the Glazers would listen. I don't think they'll care. And I just don't think Mike Ashley would be bothered at all. He lives in London. He won't care what what a few hundred jerseys are going to do. If anything, we might end up just causing damage to our own stadium. That's the thing. And like you said, the owners weren't there the other day. Hey, they might have just been playing golf somewhere, and it might have just been a little memo at the end of the day that this happened. Who knows? Like, they just they're not going to be bothered about these little things, but at the end of the day, I can fully, fully sympathise with how passionate people all feel about this and how much they want to do anything just to make a bit of an impact. But I guess, as Steve says, you don't want it to be the norm. You don't, every time something happens, then everyone's going to need to go one step further to make an impact. And, you know, where does that stop? At the end of the day, the game got called off. The players couldn't get in. Players were at a hotel. Everyone was outside the stadium. Luckily, no one was hurt as far as I'm aware. But who did it actually punish on that day? I guess the teams involved. That's it.
Well, there it is. And I saw a banner outside the stadium that said, we decide when you play. Now, let's say, for example, from now until the end of the season, which isn't far away, imagine United fans turning up to the hotel that the players are in, 2,000-3,000 of them, stopping them from leaving the hotel to get on the coach. So every match has to be postponed. Then what happens? Now, people are saying, well, Man United should be deducted points. Well, okay, should the club suffer because of the fans? It's the same with the whole racism element that we've spoken about in the past. People said, well, how can you deduct teams' points for one or two stupid supporters that make racist remarks because you're affecting everyone else? So the same could be said about the whole points deduction here as well. I know it's not the same thing. If you want to talk about the level of severity, it's not the same thing, but the punishment is the same, isn't it? Or what they're talking about. So if United fans do turn up and blockade the hotel and stop the games from being played, is that going to affect the Glazers in any way? I don't know.
It is if they get a 25 point deduction and get relegated and end up playing in the Championship.
There you go.
You only have to do that twice and you're down. So
you know, these are, you know, that Bill touched on, these are the old Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the old Manchester. These are multi-billionaires. So they're raking it in, especially with Tampa Bay at the minute, with Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl, the shirt sales that all they get, and plus with Manchester United being arguably one of the biggest clubs in the world with all the stuff they get with that. You know, they've been raking it in, absolutely raking it in, and not to even have got rid of that debt and still leaving that debt with the club. It's just scandalous. And, you know, they've obviously got away with it so long, but this Super League has just turned it over. It's just enough.
Rod, if this was happening in Greece or Turkey or a club in South America, would these owners still be able to tell a story about their tenure at the club? We saw a couple of years ago, a club owner of a team in Greece walked on the pitch with a revolver because he was pissed off with the decision that a referee made. You know, different countries, different cultures, different mentalities. You know, the way I see it, as I said before, there's one way that you're gonna get the Glazers to sell if it hits them in the pocket, and the other way is if you fear them for their lives, if you have them scared of.
Yeah, but do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I understand that, but you know where you come from, that's where you're used to it. That's not going to happen, is it? It's just, especially from where they live. And you know, look at them, they're not sporting people, they're just not, they're business people. So it's going to be difficult, and it's the only way you're going to get rid of them or eradicate it is hitting them in the pocket. And, you know, like I say, these are billionaires, so how are you going to do that?
Well, this is it. And, you know, I've spoken to many United fans today, and they said to me, oh, you know, we can't give up, we've got to continue. And you know what, hats off to them. And people will say, yeah, those people that got in and were being violent, they're idiots. Yeah, you know, to be honest, throwing a camera doesn't really do anything, does it? Or throwing a flare at Graham Souness isn't going to do anything. No. I know Graham Souness was complaining yesterday, but as Gary Neville quite rightly said, you were at Galatasaray and you stuck a Galatasaray flag on the halfway line against Fenerbahce. That is suicidal. That is something you just don't do. You know, so Souness can't really talk, and given some of the challenges that he's made in his career, you know, a bit hypocritical there, but
he's mellowed now, Graham, hasn't he? He's mellowed a bit.
He's mellowed, does he? Mellowed. I'm surprised he didn't blame Pogba for it, actually.
He's got a short memory and he's mellowed.
It was Pogba's fault that they ran on the pitch. That's Pogba's fault.
You showed some of his tackles now. He's get arrested.
Oh, yes.
Get arrested for that at his term.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't forget that. But apparently he wanted to sign for United, didn't he? Apparently he told, didn't he tell Ron Atkinson, why didn't you sign me?
Ben, didn't you have a mullet back in the day? A little perm back of the mullet, a little perm at the back.
Yeah.
He's going to start thinking out the photos now. Rod's going
Stuart Pearce shorts rolled up, being perm at the back. Tan leg. Beautiful.
Wonderful. All right. Well, before we wrap it up, Amy, thank you for joining us. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Is there anything else you've seen in the football world you'd like to discuss this weekend or anything in particular? No?
No, just thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure's all ours, and hopefully we could do this again sometime. Do you want to give your Twitter handle or any social media you have a quick mention?
Go on, and I'll have a little plug. Yeah. Go on. At FPL Amy, two Ys. Someone else pinched FPL Amy with one Y.
Shall we find out where they live and arrange a protest?
Yeah, sorry.
Give me the handle. Excellent. Steve?
Yeah, nothing for me, Stel. Just thanks for having us as always. And a welcome addition tonight, Amy. Nice to chat with you. And I'll see you all again.
Great stuff. Rod?
Yeah, Rod James Gig. Yeah, it's good to have you on, Amy.
Any other podcast appearances that you'd like to mention that will go ahead? Sorry, Sam, I had to say that.
No.
Okay, fair
enough. I'm going to go back on that one, Views Official, because that it kind of messed up, and I went back on the Line of Duty was on, and I got distracted.
One or the other. But listen, Sam's is a good boy, and then Patrick's a good boy as well. It's a great podcast.
Yeah, Patrick, I'll be back on, yeah.
You know, they've been very supportive of us and vice versa. So, yeah. There you go. Right, so that's it for another episode of Shoot the Defence. We'll be back this time next week. Hopefully, I'll be in an even happier mood when my team in Cyprus wins the title. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but fingers crossed.